Good. Okay, so we are in Perek Yud Dalet, chapter 14, and we were in this section where Yonatan eats the dvash, and Sandy mentioned last week that the difficulty of taking Rashi's view that the dvash is actually sugar from the cane, because sugar, as you reported from South Africa, doesn't ooze. He's dipping down his staff and taking some on the stem. It's like the bowl. He dips it in. So I looked around online also, could not find any reference. Like, I looked at, like, you know, the, you know, how sugarcane grows and so on. I couldn't find anything about there being any liquid around, not to mention just in terms of where sugarcane grows and where it's from. It's not really from that region. It can grow there. And I wouldn't rule it out just on that basis. We have other plants that we know of in Tanakh where the argument has been made at times, well, that's not found in the Middle East, and then they were found to be wrong. But it is odd that Rashi insists that it's sugarcane when everybody else is just saying that this is just, you know, fruit that's really sweet, that's mushy, and, you know, that's... I'm sorry, not that answer. They're giving the answer that it's bee honey, that it's...
As opposed to date. Well,
as opposed to date honey, which is the sweet fruit, yeah.
Maple trees have some running, but it's not sweet until you boil it.
Yeah.
And also,
you have words that are used when you're talking about sap from a tree. That's not going to be called dvash. I don't know, but the advantage of Rashi's sugarcane explanation is simply that... It makes what he ate so insignificant, it builds up the shock that he would be held responsible for it. Like, you know, what he had was nothing. It's not even honey, which at least has substance to it. I don't know if that's his reason, but I think that it definitely adds that dimension.
But there is molasses comes from sugar cane.
No.
Yeah, but it does, but you have to cook it.
It isn't
a natural
thing.
It's not as though you're riding in the field and you see molasses on the ground.
I stepped in it when I was a kid in Egypt.
Yeah? Stepped in molasses. But not because it grew there. Someone dropped some.
It must have been, it was the sugar factory, so long sugar cane.
Yes. Okay. So, however you read what he ate, I felt, and I said at the end last time, that the fact that what he eats is something sweet and is a delicacy, and dvash throughout Tanakh is presented that way. I referred you to a few sources last time. I think it matters because the nation, which is starving, had a chance for a delicacy and didn't have, and the prince ate some of it. And that may affect Shaul's decision about how to handle Yonatan's mistake. So we'll see that as we go through today, God willing. Pasuk Chaf Chet, sentence 28, describes how, in contrast to Yonatan, who enjoyed the honey, and Bataorna Einav, his eyes lit up, it says, Vayan Ishmei Ha'am, the people responded, and Vayomer, or somebody from the people responded, saying, Hashpeya Hishpia Vicha Sa'am Leimor, Arur Ha'ish Asher Yocha Lechem Hayom. Your father issued a curse upon anybody who eats who eats anything today, who eats food today. And again, as we said last time, there's some debate as to whether Vayah Ha'am, the end of the sentence, the nation was tired, is part of what that man said. That's the way Radak reads it. That's actually part of the man's sentence, saying, you know, we're exhausted here because of your father's oath, or whether, as Abarbanel says, is just part of the logical flow of the text to say, look, Yonatan ate and his eyes lit up, the people did not eat, and therefore they were exhausted. That's the other way to read it. It doesn't really change our understanding of the text, though. Yes, all right.
Is there any way Lechem could be literal?
No. If lechem were literal, meaning, when you say literal, you mean bread.
And therefore he wasn't over on the...
Right, so then, no, because then, exactly, then there wouldn't even be a question. If his father had really said, don't eat bread, and he ate honey, no one would be raising an eyebrow. It's because lechem here is not literal. So if you take a look at Pesukim Chavtet and Lamed, we read this last time, but now I want to discuss it, you see Yonatan's response. It's really a shocking response. Vayomer Yonatan said, Achar et haaretz. My father has muddied the land. My father has clouded the land. Right? If you remember the response of Yaakov when Shimon and Levi, kill out the population of Shem. Achartem oti. You have muddied me. You have dirtied me. So my father has clouded and dirtied the land. And again, haaretz, we said in this section before, is a reference to the people. It doesn't mean the land. It means the population. Just like before when it said the aretz entered the forest, it meant the nation entered the forest. Re'una ki oruena. He says, look how good I am now. I feel great because I had some of the honey. Just because I had a little bit of this honey. If the nation had only eaten something from the spoils, you know what? Wouldn't we have been great against the Plishtim? We could have done even more if only we had had something to eat. And as we said when we first read this, this is not the response we expected. Right? What did you expect Yonatan to say when he found out he broke his father's...
I'm sorry.
Right, some kind of an apology. That's not what we're seeing here.
I see him as a rebel, though, from what I've read about him so far.
Oh, that's what it sounds like, which is kind of surprising. That's not his reputation.
It's not his actions...
Is there any indication here that he knew about the oath?
No,
or he just
it's explicit that it's explicit that he did not know.
You think it's explicit?
Yeah, no, I know it's explicit.
Okay.
It said it's in the text. It was back in which Chazayin. Thank you. Look at Pasuk Chazayin. Veratan lo shama bashbia vivetam. He was not. He did not know.
So
that is correct. Yeah, he doesn't give you an excuse. What a bad idea my father had. It's very strange. And look at Rashi. Look at what Rashi says. In source number one, Achar Avias Haaretz. I translated my father clouded, muddied, whatever. But Rashi says, Bilbel es da'atam ve'es yeshuasam kemayim achurim. He confused their minds and their victory, and Rashi gives you a use of the word achar, the phrase mayim achurim, which is a reference to cloudy water. In other words, my father has really made it hard for the nation. Here I also bring you an interesting side note. It's too interesting to not mention it. When I was hunting for commentary on this pasuk and on Yonatan's response, I came across this piece of a responsum by Rabbi Ephraim Weinberger, who was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, as you see. I gave you the years there, 1946 to 1964. He was addressing the issue of kosher food for the IDF. And look at what he has to say here. This is part of a longer piece, and that's important to know. But ma'chalot asirot b'chalutzei tzava, regarding treif for soldiers. So he says, achein yadua shebamelchama darush mikol ish tzava rikuz shel hachushim ba'kochot l'mana maracha shabat tzluya kiyum ha'umakula. He says it is known that when you're in war, every soldier has to be able to concentrate his senses and his energies, his abilities, for the sake of the battle, and everybody's welfare depends on that success. You need the soldiers to be focused. And any expression of unwillingness or of suffering by a soldier endangers the entire battle. That's why the Torah says that if somebody is afraid, if somebody is a soft heart, he should go home. Right? That's the part of the message that is given to the nation before they go to Mohammed HaRashut, to discretionary war, is, if you're afraid, go home. Why? So he takes it on a very literal level, because you can't have soldiers there who don't want to be there. And he says, that's why the sages permitted various practices during war. He gives you references in the Hebrew to a few passages of Gemara. And he says, especially about food and nutrition for the army during times of battle. So for example, we have a leniency regarding washing your hands before having bread. He says, "Ki b'melchama hanitzachon talui b'kosho amelchamti v'chizuku famshal chayalim." Because it's war, you know, you need people's abilities and you need their physical strength. V'lo b'chinam, and now he goes to our story. V'lo b'chinam hitbate Yehonatan ha'adin kashot al Shaul aviv. He says it's not for nothing that gentle Yonatan. He hasn't been gentle so far, but apparently he is. Gentle Yonatan expresses himself so harshly at his father. When his father prohibited having food during this time of military action, therefore he says, Lamrot ha-bechila l'machalot asurot. He says, despite the revulsion we have for forbidden foods, he tira atar b'machama l'hatzava k'shein ocha kasher matzui b'stei akrav she'ochal afilu b'li sakanat nefashot k'dei she'achzik ma'amad v'yanchum apala l'ha'oyev. He says, therefore the Torah permits an army that is at war, assuming that kosher food is in fact unavailable, that they're allowed to eat non-kosher. We're not talking about to save a life where, you know, they're on their last legs and are going to die. But just in general, they're allowed to have this in order to be able to maintain their position. He's not recommending that the army be fed treif as a general principle. But what he's saying is, you see from here the importance of nutrition in a time of battle, and the nation is depending on the army, and therefore, he says, you could have a leniency in the in a case where stringency is simply not an option. So he takes Yonatan's point and channels it as a halachic statement. In sum, what you have in this section is, Yonatan eats a delicacy, not aware that his father has said no eating. He finds out, and his reaction is to criticize his father's oath. And this is his third break from his father. Right? What were the other two?
He didn't tell him that he was going.
Didn't tell him. Well, the first one was
he killed
the Plishti. Right? His first one was killing the Plishti. And his second one was he didn't tell his father when he went out to attack the Plishti. This is now your third strike, Yonatan. Okay. That brings us to a separate story, which is really strange. And we need to figure out what exactly it is that is going on here. So, starting with Pasuk Lamed Aleph, it'll take us Lamed Aleph to Lamed Hey. I titled it on the sheet, The Nations Meet, and you will see why. But actually, you know what? As an introduction to this section, take a look at source number 3. It's a Pasuk we've actually seen before. Lo sochalu al hadam, lo sinachashu velo se'onenu. You shall not eat upon the blood, you shall not perform nachash, and you shall not read omens. So nachash, we've discussed at length, right? That's the business of divination, but we talked about it in terms of setting up tests. Like if the black cat crosses the road in front of me, then I'm not going to go there, right? That kind of thing. We said that's prohibited. Omens, out. I'm not allowed to say, well, there was an eclipse, and therefore I shouldn't... Whatever it is. What is you shall not eat upon the blood? What does that mean? There is a rule that you're not allowed to eat the blood of an animal that you've shefted. That is absolutely true. The Torah states it multiple times. Is that what this is talking about? Don't eat blood?
Maybe when you get the korban? You don't blood separately?
It is not a clear text, but look at it in context.
It's got to be something about some divining, yeah.
Right, it's got to have some kind of sorcery association. It's found in the Chumash in a section which is about sorcery. So usually it's assumed that lo sochlu al adam is don't eat with blood or don't eat blood as part of some kind of witchcraft. That's the usual way that it is taken, and the reason I bring it here is because Shaul is going to accuse the nation of achila al hadam. At this point in their, you know, in their battle, or right after their battle, it's very strange because as the story is going to play out, the people are going to eat meat. It's not clear whether they eat it during the day. Hang on, not clear whether they eat it during the day. Which is what it sounds like from Pasuk Lamed Gimel, we'll see. Or whether it's in the evening, which is Radak and Abarbanel. But either way, the issue is not breaking their oath. That's not the problem. Meaning, they're eating this, after the oath is over, the battle is over, now they're allowed to eat. They eat meat, but they do something that is prohibited. And Shaul is going to correct it that night and build a mizbeach. That's just the guts of what is going to take place here. Ricky.
At the first reading, when I read the word dam, it made me think of the killed the soldiers that are bleeding and everything, and maybe you shouldn't be eating while they're bleeding.
That's an interesting idea.
Just going to say the same thing.
Meaning our soldiers or the Plishti soldiers?
Any soldiers.
Our soldiers.
While you're eating over dead people, it's like chilulamet or whatever.
That's interesting. No, it's an interesting idea. I have to admit not having thought of that at all. Take a look at the psukim. Let's read the psukim and then see. Because, well, let's read the psukim and then we'll see why that might be a little challenging. So, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayaku bayom hahu baplishtim mi michmas ayalona. They strike the plishtim from michmas. Remember, michmas was where the plishtim had massed their armies, to ayalon. Presumably that's Emek Ayalon, I would think. Where Yoshua stops the sun, vayah ha'am ma'od, and they are very exhausted. Right, they were already exhausted in pasuk chavchet. In pasuk lamed aleph, they're very exhausted. Vayat, it says vayat, but we read it as vayat ha'am el hashalal, which is an interesting turn of phrase because we're going to see in the next parak in the story with Shaul and Amalek. That there it's Vata'at al Hashalal. Hashem says, you dipped into the spoils, so you went after the spoils. So to here, they go after the spoils. Vayikhud son uvakar uvnevakar vayishchatu arza. That's a very interesting turn of phrase. I would like a translation of that phrase from the word vayikhud to arza. So let's see. We have, Alina, you have the art scroll?
Yeah.
Please, what does that say?
And took sheep, cattle, and young cattle.
Sheep, cattle, and young cattle, and shechted it arza on the ground. Slaughtered them on the ground. Okay. Debbie, you've got the Koran one. What does that say?
Took sheep, oxen, and calves, and slew them on the ground.
Okay. Sheep, oxen, and calves. So, bakar and bnei bakar, it sounds a little bit like what Alina had in the art scroll. It's older animals and younger animals. Right, that's what it sounds like. Francine, you have the pink edition. What do they do?
Sheep, cat, oxen, and calves.
You have it.
Sheep,
oxen, and calves. Okay,
but no young ones.
Right, slaughter them on the ground is why. Okay, so keep this in mind. No one else has. Actually, no, Eileen, you have a different.
Same.
Okay. Okay. Mine doesn't have it. It's just Hebrew. But this is something we're going to come back to because it's odd to see bakaru bnei bakar. Why are you drawing that distinction? But they check the animals on the ground. They do a proper shechita. It's kosher. Vayochal ha'am al hadam, and the people ate on the blood. And again, we don't know what that phrase means. One suggestion so far, they're eating and the soldiers are bleeding. But let's see more.
Did it say anything about cooking it?
No, who said they did?
It says eat them with the blood.
So your translation says with the blood. That's nice. That's not what it says here. On the blood. Now, al can be with. Al can also be next to. So let's see what happens. Ve'agidu l'Shaul le'mor, hinei ha'am chot'im l'Hashem l'chol ha'adam. Somebody says to Shaul, these people are sinning. They're eating on the blood. Ve'yomer begadetem. And Shaul says, traitors, golu elai hayom evin gedola. Roll a large stone to me today.
Did they ever give him permission to eat?
Which, by the way, is why I thought they were eating today, says Hayom.
He said it was over. It just says they killed people, and right. They were hungry, so they went to eat.
Correct. But no, they will not be criticized at all here for breaking the oath. No one's even going to mention it. That's not the concern.
They should, though.
I'm saying that it must be that the oath is now over. Correct. Vayomer Shaul, hutsu va'am. So Shaul says, spread out among the nation. Vamartem lahem, and tell them, Hagishu elai ish shoro v'ish siyehu, ushkatatem bazeva achaltem. He says, bring me your ox, bring me your sheep, shecht it with this. With this, some say means by the stone, and some say means he gave them a shechita knife. Va'achaltem, and eat. Ve'lo'sechet u'la'shem la'chol adam, and don't sin against God by eating to the blood. Ve'yagishu chalam ish sharov v'yadav halayla v'yishchatu sham, and everybody brought him their ox that night, and he shechted there. That's clearly night, obviously. Va'yiven sha'ul mizbeach la'shem, Shaul built an altar for God. Oso hechel livnos mizbeach la'shem, that he began to build as a mizbeach for Hashem. Okay, so other than this business of eating on the blood, what else is strange here?
Yeah. He didn't consult with the Navi?
Where's Shmuel? This is a big thing going on here.
Was he in the battle?
We haven't seen him. I haven't seen Shmuel since the time when Shaul brought the carbon and Shmuel yelled at him. Mm-hmm. Right? Shmuel has not been found. Isn't that interesting?
My time.
And he's in Florida.
He was waiting for the end of the battle.
Sorry?
The last pasuk is very oddly phrased. Like,
yeah. What's that language in pasuk lamed hey? Shaul built the mizbeach for God. That he began to build the mizbeach for God.
So this says it's the first one that he built.
So that's one way to take it, is that it's the first one he built. We're going to see commentaries on it, but it's because the literal text is very hard to sustain.
Is he allowed to build it?
Why not?
Oh, they can build it outside of Mishkan.
Mishkan Shilo is done, and at this point, bamot are permitted. Yeah, we saw other bamot earlier. Yeah, no, you can have a private altar at this stage in history. But what else is strange here?
They've already eaten. Why is he telling them to come back and...
Well, evidently he interrupted their meal.
Yeah.
Right?
So this was an altar for God. Maybe another Mizbeach he built wasn't for God?
Uh-oh. That would be a problem. It says that, meaning this one, he began to build a Mizbeach for God. Is that suggesting that he had built a Mizbeach for somebody else first? That would be out of character for what we've seen with Shaul in general. But it's an interesting idea. I'm stuck on this stone that he rolls over there. Clearly it's a corrective for whatever eating on the blood was. Or it sounds like it is. Rashi actually isn't going to think so, but everybody else will. If you're going to take the view that what they're doing wrong is that they're eating while enemy soldiers or their soldiers are bleeding or whatever, then how does rolling a stone over correct that?
Well, it is something substantial.
Well, then you can't see. So you can't see the soldiers.
I'm sorry?
You can't see the soldiers who are bleeding then. It won't disturb your eating. You were going to say. That was a joke.
No, but to make a misbeh, you need something substantial.
But why? Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm divorcing that from the part about the soldiers.
Okay.
Just about a misbeh at small.
So misbeh doesn't have to be that large.
Still, something.
I mean, it looks better this way, but it doesn't have to be.
Maybe they were slaughtering them.
But I'm going back to the view that says that it's about the bleeding soldiers. I don't see how the rock is then a corrective. You know, if that's really the issue, he should have said, go bury the dead, go bandage the wounded, or something along those lines. He didn't say that. That's my challenge.
Okay. Maybe they bled on the rock, and he was turning the rock over so that...
He just says, roll me a big rock. He doesn't say that rock.
Okay.
Yeah.
They were eating without having thanked God first for winning the battle. So he builds a mizbeach in order to...
But why does
God.
He call that lo sochu al hadam? Why is that eating on blood?
Oh, that's what you said. It could be that they're eating while they're still near the blood, in the blood within the war, before they thank God. You can tie those two things together.
See, the interesting thing that's in that suggestion, and I haven't seen any commentators go that route. We have an idea, not an idea, we have a halacha, that one is not supposed to eat in the morning before they daven. Right? Daven first, and then after that you eat. And one of the major points that's brought there is because you're not supposed to look after your physical comfort, right, as your first step of the day. That's arrogant. Your first step of the day should be to talk to God. And then afterwards, look after your comfort. Yes, it's true, Hasidim eat, before they daven, based on the idea that you can't really concentrate on talking to God properly when you're hungry. So some people need coffee.
That goes for the entire day.
Some people
of Yom
need breakfast. It seems that they're stuck on Yom Kippur. What can I tell you? Maybe they're spending the rest of the year atoning for Yom Kippur. But the point is that lo sochel al adam is actually part of that. Don't eat on the blood, meaning don't eat before you have petitioned God for your blood. So it's an interesting idea. I haven't seen anybody bring that in, but it does resonate. In other words, eating before having thanked Hashem. Let's see what the commentators do with this.
But they were very hungry. I mean, they just couldn't wait anymore.
They were very hungry. They couldn't wait anymore. Well, that is something I want to come back to. I'm going to hang on to that idea. So there are multiple views about what this eating on the blood is, but basically you can boil them down to two. One view is that what they were actually doing was they were bringing karbanot. However, they botched the karbanot. They made a mistake with them. That's one view. The other view is no, they were not bringing karbanot. They were just eating. But there was something improper about the way that they ate. So within the view that it's a karban that was botched, that's a Gemara in Zvachim, and the Malbim supports it as well. Take a look at source number 4. This requires some explanation and a little bit of patience in order to grasp what this Gemara is talking about. This Gemara really, in context, is part of a discussion about private altars versus public ones. We've discussed before, the last parak in Zvachim is the one that teaches when you were allowed to use a private altar and when you were only allowed to use to bring a karban on the big altar in the Mishkan or in the Beis HaMikdash. So it has the discussions about when private altars are okay and what you would do on a private altar. So the issue here that they're discussing in context is whether you're allowed to shecht on a private altar at night. Karbanos, generally speaking, are not brought at night. The first karban of the day is supposed to be the morning karban tamid, the daily karban. The last karban of the day is supposed to be the afternoon karban tamid. There are a couple of exceptions to that rule that are not relevant for us right now, like karban Pesach and Pesach HaShabbat, something like that. But that's the basic principle. Your first thing is karban tamid in the morning. Your last thing is karban tamid in the afternoon. So the question is, that's in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan. But what if it's your own private altar in your backyard at the time when those altars are permitted? Do those rules apply? We know that not all rules apply. For example, in the Beis HaMikdash, avoda is done by a kohen. Outside of the Beis HaMikdash, and a private bama, it can be a non-kohen. So there is precedent for saying the rules change. So now look at this Gemara. Itmar, we've learned. Shechitas laila bebamas yachid. This question of whether you can shecht at night on a private altar, Rav Ushmuel, is actually a debate between Rav and Shmuel. Chad Amar Ksheira, one said, yeah, that's fine. The Chad Amar Psula, one said, no, it's not fine. Ukumiflagi b'drabi Elazar. And their debate that they have is actually a debate also regarding a point made by Rabbi Elazar before them. What was that? Rabbi Elazar Rami Kraya Hadadi. Rabbi Elazar literally threw two sentences against each other. They're two sentences in our story. And it's what I was trying to point out when I noted the day versus the night. Ksiv, on one hand, the Pasuk says, Vayomer Begadetem, he said, you have been treasonous. Golu Eli Hayom Eben Gedola. Roll to me today a large stone. So today sounds like this is during the daytime. It doesn't have to be. You could read it as now, but it sounds like it's today. However, the other Pasuk said, Vayomer Shaul, Putzu Ba'am, spread out among the nation, and bring me, each man, his ox. And they brought him their ox. Then it was Halayla, that night. So I don't understand. Was it during the day, or was it during the night? You know, maybe the first right. Maybe his announcement was, roll me the stone today, and they started on that, but it still took until that night, so he got the animals. You could certainly say that.
Well,
however,
time to bring them. Yeah.
The Gemara says that Rav and Shmuel have two different answers. Rav's answer, or it doesn't say who's who, Mar, one of them, Mishani, answered, Kan Bechulin, Kan Bekachim. He says, one was about bringing a non-carbon, the other was about bringing a carbon, meaning, when it's talking about doing something at night, that was mundane. That wasn't a karban. What they're doing on the stone during the day, that's a karban. Umar Mishani, the other one answered, Kan Bekatshe Bama Gedola, Kan Bekatshe Bama Ketana. The other one said that one verse is talking about sacrificing on a great altar, a communal altar, and one is talking about on a private one. Private ones can be at night, communal ones during the day. So the first approach says that the that you would not be allowed to bring a korban even on a minor altar at night. Has to be during the day. The second one feels it is okay. My point in bringing this is that the Gemara is working with the assumption that the daytime shechita, which was the one that he criticized, was in fact a korban. What was the mistake that they made then within this view? The mistake is brought in various commentators. I didn't actually mean to bring you that part from the Gemara here. Is that they ate before putting the blood on the Mizbeach. Meaning, it is essential for a korban that you take some of the blood from the animal and you put it on the Mizbeach. That's part of the ritual, and you're not allowed to eat from the korban until you've done that. So Shaul says they're making a mistake of eating on the blood, meaning before this ritual has been performed. And so he says, here's a stone, and either the he says either use the stone and bring non-carbonos, right? That night, or here's a stone and do carbonos properly with zrika, with this sprinkling of the blood, and then later he's going to turn it into a formal altar. The question I have when reading this account of it is, what's the basis for saying that these were carbonos at all? Where's our hint in the text that these were carbonos? Is that true? I think there is.
Lishchatu, it's lishchot is different from to kill.
Right, but lishchot is what you would do because it's kosher.
Yeah.
Like that's the term we use as opposed to nevela.
So maybe that's a hint.
Right. So one piece of evidence is the fact that he builds an altar that gives this whole section an aura of consecration. And I think also logic, right? Ezi took it as a given, you should bring a carbon first, right, before you're going to go eat. And maybe that's what the Gemara is assuming. And so must be these were carbonot, and what they did was they brought a carbon incorrectly because they didn't wait. They weren't patient for the Zrika. The other school of thought is that this was regular eating. Regular eating. It wasn't a carbon. And they did it improperly. Rashi says it's a misdirection. We all get stuck on, we get hung up on the stone and assume that whatever was wrong related to somehow or was corrected by rolling over the stone. However, Rashi says that's not what was actually going on. It's what I tried to highlight as we read the text. It's the Bakar and B'nei Bakar. Take a look at source number 5. Son ubakar uvnei bakar. Omer ani. Rashi says, I say. And he says, I say, because that's not what the Medrash thinks. The Medrash thinks what we saw in the Gemara. He says, I say, ze oso ve'es b'no lo sishchatu. We have a law that says you're not allowed to shecht an animal and its young on the same day. And that's what they were doing here. Because it's bakar and b'nei bakar, which is why when he has them bring their animals, he says, just bring shor v'seh, meaning don't bring the animal and its young. And in fact, that's what happened. They don't bring the animal and its young. It's a very interesting read. What's the problem with it?
They're famished. They just finished a war. Who's sitting and going,
well, that's your responsibility. You want to eat, you know, do it right.
It's not even their own stock, right? They're plundering what they took from the Plishtim.
Yeah.
I don't know. So obvious which animal has which kid?
Well, I mean, you can take mature ones versus the non-mature ones. But what's the obvious problem with this? I don't. It's not a complicated one.
Why would Shaul be making korban for the nation? Wouldn't he get a kohen or something like that?
Don't need one.
You don't need one.
Yeah. No, but his phrase is eating on the blood. Right? He accuses them of eating on the blood. How does that fit with eating the mother and its young? It doesn't. I mean, it's an odd turn of phrase. If that was what bothered you, then that's what you should have said. So that's the weakness in this explanation.
Is it over the young or on the young? Like in English?
It's the animal and its young. Animal and its young don't shecht on the same day.
Yeah, that's the second part. But the first part, eating over the blood, it could be over the blood, or which is like this, not touching the blood, or on the blood.
But are you within Rashi, or are you
no,
saying
I
this separately?
Oh,
okay.
And also, I thought of this animal and its young, it's like, thou shalt not boil the, or cook the baby, or the young in its mother's blood.
Right.
No. Is it related? No.
No.
I mean, I'm not.
So, yes and no. Yes and no. No, not in the sense of the literal mitzvah. Those are two separate mitzvot.
No.
But yes, there are those who will say, who will suggest that they're both this element of the parent and the young. I mean, Ibn Ezra, I think it is, who says that Osoveh Espino is an eco mitzvah. He says the idea is that if you kill the mother and the young, then you've knocked out the line. So don't do that either. Keep the mother alive and it can have more children, or keep the young alive and then they're able to produce more. Of course, you could just do it in sequence, right? You could just wait, do one day and one the next day. But nonetheless, the Radak gives a more conventional answer to what's going on. Fits the language of Al Hadam a lot better. And also explains what the business with the rock is. Take a look at source number 6. Hebrew's at the bottom of one side, English at the top of the next side. Ba'erev ochlu. He says, first of all, they ate in the evening. He says, don't worry about them eating during the day and all that. They ate at night, so don't worry. Uberusho al hadam. As far as on of the blood, lefisha hayu mechinim habasar bechipazon, ki hayu re'evim. They're really, really hungry. And therefore, they're preparing everything very quickly. They shechted on the ground, like the language of the text, right? Which said that they shechted al haaretz, so that supports it. Or what was it? Arza? What was the language? Arza. So that supports this idea as well. And he says, the result was the blood didn't flow out properly from the meat. It wasn't certainly squeezed out well from the meat. But in the vlava basar, it was absorbed in it. And as we've said, you're not allowed to eat blood. So Shaul rolls over this big stone for them to shecht on it, so that the blood will flow out properly. And he says, don't get confused by the pasuk that we read in the beginning, which says "Lo sochlu al adam." Right? Don't eat. Don't get confused by that one. That's not what that pasuk is referring to. That pasuk is not about eating blood. He says that pasuk in context is about sorcery. It's about people who slaughter animals for shedim. Shedim are some form of a desert demon. That they eat. On the blood, around the blood, I should say. Excuse me. They eat around the blood after shechting for it. And he says that you can tell from the context. Don't do nichush, don't read omens, and don't slaughter and eat for these demon things. So Radak says, don't get hung up on that pasuk. That pasuk doesn't matter for our purposes at all. And the issue here is, yes, the language is similar, but the issue here is that they're eating food that's been sitting on the blood, and therefore it has absorbed the blood, and therefore it is treif. That's the way that that Radak reads it. One more read. Ralbag and Abarbanel. Ralbag and Abarbanel also assume that the stone is part of the solution to the problem, and that the issue involves blood. But they take it differently. What they suggest is, I'll say it outside and then we'll see it in the text of Abarbanel. The issue is that the people are eating the way that idolaters would. Meaning, if you read Radak carefully, he said the practice of the idolaters was they would have this big bowl of blood and people would sit around it and eat. I'm not so familiar with that, but it's all right. I can't tell you. No. It's just like with the blood from the animal present. It's some form of ritual. You know, you have the animal.
They rubbed it on themselves. The blood.
That's the there's no end to human creativity. So they have this big bowl of blood, and they would do it for Avodah Zarah. So Abarbanel says, the Jews also, they have this, you know, whatever, they drained the blood into there, and they're eating right there. They didn't go somewhere else to eat. It looks like what idolaters do, and the concern is that even though your intent is not sorcery, witchcraft, idolatry, whatever, nonetheless, you still shouldn't have a tree with lights on it in your house at the end of December. They don't do the things they do, even if you don't have their religion in mind. That's the idea. Take a look at Barbanel in source number 7. Hayoser Nira Hushayin Kipshuto. He says it appears more correct that the answer to this is what it sounds like, the simple read. The Jews are hungry, they are thirsty. They shechted and they ate right there beside the blood, with the blood, as your text had the translation. Meaning next to it, around it. Ulafisha Torah Sivsa Lo Sochlu Al Adam, the Torah says don't eat on the blood, nechshav lehem la'avon, that's considered sinful. V'zeu shomer lechol la'adam, and so Shaul said, you're eating on the blood. Ve'im hayos shahaysa kavana b'tzivoy ha'eloki, l'shalo yistabchu b'umoz ha'nifsados, shahayu az la'anashim sha'osim zeh. He says, granted that the intent of the Chumash in this pasuk is not to do this because you get mixed up in all of their weird beliefs that they have, their incorrect beliefs that they have. V'kamla wa'asa'u yisrakim b'chipazon umrutzam echoser kol. The Jews are doing this only because they're really hungry, and so they're just eating as fast as they can. Hinei chashash Shaul al hayosa devar mipas atzmo avon plili. Shaul worried that the act itself might be considered a criminal act. Ulezetzi vashir golu evan gedola v'makom nifrad. And so he says, roll over this stone. Okay, so we have multiple explanations. At this point, we have, aside from Etty's idea about the you're eating before you've brought a korban, we have four other explanations. One is, this was a korban done improperly, because they ate before they put the blood on the Mizbeach. And then three approaches that say that it's not a korban at all, but rather, either Osov as Beno, to have the mother and and the young, which is deduced from the fact that it says Bakar ben Bakar, or the idea of Radak, that they ate on the blood. Al Hadam, the food was on it, and therefore the blood was absorbed in it. The blood had never left it. Or Balbag / Abarbanel, which also take it from Al Hadam, but say it's because the pasuk says in Sefer VaYikra, you're not supposed to eat beside the blood. Granted that what they were doing was not the practice that VaYikra is prohibiting. However, it looks like it. And maybe the act itself is prohibited even when the intent is not the intent for Avodah Zarah.
So how does the solution solve that last problem? By bringing it to a rock, how does that happen?
Because now the blood will drain out, right? They're shechting there, and the blood doesn't pool near where they're eating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the idea. So Shaul says, shecht here, on this spot, on the stone. That's the way Malbim reads it. The Gemara in Chulin says he actually checks a shechita knife for them. That's its own discussion. But then, he builds a Mizbeach, and he started to build a Mizbeach for God. So we were really puzzled by this wording. Radak offers three different explanations of the redundant, or apparently redundant, phrase, he started to build. If you take a look at source number 8, he says, Oso ha-Mizbeach, that Mizbeach, Hayat Chilas HaMizbechot Shebana Shaul. That's the first of Shaul's Mizbechot. But wait a minute. Didn't he bring Karbanos? Right? He even got in trouble for that? Right? Bringing the before Shaul. So that's the answer that Radak brings. Kimashi Kriv Karbanot BaGilgal Matzah Sham HaMizbeach Banui. Yeah, he'd be running Gilgal on an existing Mizbeach. That's not so strange. Ubidrash, and then you have the Medrash. Omer Rabbi Yudin Hechel Bamalachim. He is the first king to build a Mizbeach, because after all, he's the first king. Right? When you are the first, you hold all the team records. That's the way it works. The Od Yesh Drash, and then another Medrash. Osa Mizbeach Hu Hechel Livnoso. He began to build that altar. Klomar Hu Beasmo Nasano Evan Arishona. Meaning, he actually put in the first stone physically. V'achakach Banu Habonim Amizbeach Ad Kaloso. And then everybody else completed it. So what it's trying to say is, he didn't just command a Mizbeach to be built. He got his hands dirty. Yeah.
No. So that was the first stone of the Mizbeach?
So that's not necessarily what Radak is saying. Others are going to say that, though.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. That this stone is actually the first stone of the Mizbeach. Radak is not clear that that's what he means. Others, we will see, say that.
Can we assume that the people who built Mizbechot in the past, Avraham or whoever, had their servants do it for them, that it's such a big deal that he did it himself?
We don't know, but they weren't kings.
Like there's a whole, you know, so I know like it's a big deal that he did it himself and not a servant. Is that
yeah.
a big deal?
We don't know. It's a good question. So right now we have three explanations. It's his first Mizbeach of his own construction. It is the first royal Mizbeach. Or Shaul did this beginning personally. We're going to see a fourth explanation in Ralbag, so we keep the account open there. There's still more, but in order to go further with it, you have to ask, what was this Mizbeach for?
He did just have a victory.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
He did just have a victory.
So it could be that it's to thank God, or it could be that again, these were botched karbanos that they were bringing. It's simply a reaction. They were bringing karbanot, and now he is correcting it, and he builds a mizbeach so that it will be done properly. The Abarbanel and Malbim suggest this, and this is part of the idea that the mizbeach, as Debbie suggested, is built from that stone that he put in place. Abarbanel in source number 9. Says by Yoser Nachon Hu, he brings you multiple explanations for this whole business. So this is his third explanation. So he says it is more correct. Sha'amar Sha'eben Agdolah Sher Tzivah Sha'ul Agol V'Sheshachtu Sham Ish Tzono V'Ish Sharo Asim Yemenu Mizbeach L'Hashem. That stone he converted into a mizbeach. Va'Oso Ha'eben Oso Hayom Heichel Sha'ul Levnos Mizbeach Menu L'Hashem Avalon Nishlam Az. He started to build it as an altar, but it wasn't completed then. Why? Lefisha Amar Shaul Nerdach Re Plishtim Laila. Because then he's going to continue in the next piece here to say, let's go pursue the Plishtim tonight. We're not done with them. So one view is that this is the Mizbeach that's meant to correct the wrong thing that the people did. And then the second approach is to say what Abarbanel continues with and what Ralbag says. Ah, Haisa Ha'evan Ha'itchilas Ha'binyan. That stone was the start of the construction. V'sham Bana Achrechen HaMizbeach Lazkir Hanes Shana Salo Ba'oso Makom. Then he built the Mizbeach later to commemorate the miracle that Hashem did in that place. V'lasiz Todal Hashem Asher Gmalam Karach Mavuch Roch Hasadav. And to thank Hashem for giving them according to His mercy, according to His great generosity. So the second purpose of the Mizbeach is to thank God for the military victory and to commemorate the victory. I thought that you could also suggest something else, but I haven't seen anybody suggest it. And that is, he feels they did something wrong. He thinks they sinned. Maybe he's building a Mizbeach to atone. Right? The people sinned. Let's build a Mizbeach. I haven't seen anybody offer that idea. But that would be another explanation for it. But if you take the view of Ralbag / Abarbanel, that he begins with the stone now, and then after the battle he's going to complete it, that's a fourth approach to why it says he started to build. He started to build, but he didn't finish it yet. So that would be another idea. Okay, so we've now seen this very odd story. Right? We've now seen this really strange story, meaning we were all caught up in Yonatan's great victory. You're running after the Plishtim, you rout the Plishtim, so we had that narrative. And then we had the second narrative of, Yonatan broke the oath. And what's gonna happen? Right? Yonatan ate from the Dvash, he heard about the oath, he blasted his father for making the oath, and then you just dropped everything because the people made some mistake about the meat and the blood, and what is this story doing here? I mean, you could say, well, that's what happened. You know, it was just a series of events. But it's so jarring. What's going on here?
Giving a rocky start to the kingdom that will ultimately fail?
Well, he already had his rocky start, right? How many rocks does this man need?
A big rock.
Apparently a big one, yes.
To have names.
Yes.
Maybe it's his way of making Jonathan wait and sizzle there and wondering what Shaul's going to do.
Making Jonathan wait. That's an interesting idea.
What is going to happen?
Is that come next? Is he going to deal with him?
He is going to deal with him next. So I would make two. Yeah.
I just wondered if at this point he wants to bring Hashem into this, his next decision.
Yeah.
And that's why he.
That would be why he would build a Mizbeach, but yeah. But what's this whole business with the meat and the nation and, like,
well,
what is this doing here?
He's trying to atone for what they've done.
Yeah.
So that perhaps it'll be favorable, the response.
I don't know. I see two things here. Number one is Shaul taking Shmuel's role. Remember, we asked, where is Shmuel here? Like, I would have expected Shmuel to be the one to do this correcting of the nation's wrongdoing. Shaul is taking charge in correcting a religious wrong, which makes sense, because Shmuel retired from the public eye. Shmuel is going to be back, right? He's going to give Shaul his orders about Amalek, and he's going to, you know, take away his monarchy after Amalek. He's going to carry David. But Shmuel is done in the public eye. And so what you're seeing here, I think, is a very graphic demonstration that Shaul is the one who's going to handle these things going forward.
Well, that's what he was entrusted with. He was entrusted with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm not saying he's doing anything wrong. I'm saying, though, that this is a way to demonstrate to us what Shaul's role is now. And I think that's one possibility, which will also explain why he is going to be the one to take care of what happens with Yonatan.
Who's going to take care of
Shaul? In other words, it's not going to go back to Shmuel to decide. Frankly, I would have thought about having Shaul recuse himself from that discussion. But this is his job now. You can't recuse yourself. This is now his role. Ricky.
And also, here's Yonatan, he's the hero, his action led to the defeat of the Plishtim, rah, 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 Yonatan. Shaul takes it, okay, I'm the boss here, I do this, and I'm Mekam Mizbeach, and I am going to take...
I don't know, he's the king, like, this is his role.
I know, but still he takes attention to himself, like, again.
I don't know, I hear what you're saying... But it's out of character for this. It's out of character for Shaul, who hides among the Kelim. Granted that becoming king changes you, and we'll see changes in him. I hear you, but I'm not sold. But I hear it. The second approach, though, I would suggest here is it's showing fallout from Shaul's vow. Why did all of this happen? Right? Why were they Ochel al Hadam? They were hungry. The text made a point of how hungry they were, and they were very. First, they were hungry. Then they were very hungry, and then they rushed to do this. The common denominator in all of the explanations of what they did wrong is that they ate hastily because they were starving after a day of war without eating. So this story is not a separate interlude that is sort of just here in the middle while we're waiting to see what's going to happen with Yonatan. This isn't an out of nowhere interruption, kind of an intermission in the story. I think it's part of the story. It's Yonatan ate. They found out that he had eaten, and they told him what he did was wrong. And he said, "Why in the world did my father do this? The people are exhausted." And look at that. Look what happened. The people were exhausted. They ate quickly, and the result was a mess. So it actually is, if anything, a story that's on Yonatan's side, effectively.
And that's why Shaul had to make a sacrifice.
Because it's wrongdoing.
His problem.
That's interesting. I didn't think of that. So Shaul is effectively, potentially, bringing a carbon, atoning for himself. Hadn't thought about that. It's an interesting idea. Okay. So that's what we've seen here. I guess that's actually a good spot for us to resume next time, which again is going to be, God willing, January 9th. Right? January 9th. But I hope that everybody who is in town will be at our Day of Tanakh study, God willing, on a week from tomorrow. It is December... No, a week from yesterday. Sorry. I get my days confused. A week from yesterday. It'll be Wednesday. Starts at 9, runs till 4:30. Free pizza lunch if you register online. Hope to see you there. Thank you.